When I say the name Sylvia Plath, what comes to mind? Her poetry, her novel The Bell Jar, her marriage to the fellow poet Ted Hughes, or maybe her death by suicide at the age of 30? Well, in Sylvia Plath's many letters, a much more complex picture emerges. A man who has read all of these letters is Peter Steinberg. He's just co-edited a project that's gathered all of her correspondence together, and the second volume of these letters has just come out. The book chronicles Sylvia's love for her husband, setting up house in England, having babies, getting published. There are many letters about her happiness and writing. But the book also charts the breakdown of the marriage and the extreme distress this caused. The book is called The Letters of Sylvia Plath, and it covers the period from 1956 to 1963. And before we get started, I do want to remind you of the number for Lifeline, 13 11 14. Peter Steinberg, welcome.
Thank you very much.
We know Sylvia Plath for her deeply personal poetry. We know her for her novel, The Bell Jar. What did letter writing mean to Sylvia Plath?
Well, for Sylvia Plath, it was the main way of communicating with her family and with her friends and boyfriends and any number of other people, publishers. Because back then in the 1950s and 60s, communication by telephone was very expensive. So letter writing was economical and it was also quite efficient.
And how many letters did you compile for this project, Peter? Because it's a huge amount.
Yeah, well, we've just actually finished doing revisions for the paperback. And as a part of that, we were able to add additional letters that we found. So the total between the two volumes will be 1,424.
Wow. I mean, you have read so many of these. How would you describe Plath's letter writing style?
She actually catered her letters to the recipient very conscientiously. We don't often have the letter that she received, but you can often glean sort of what she was responding to based on her letters back. So we see her being a dutiful daughter writing to her mother, writing to her brother, aunts and uncles. We see her being flirtatious with boyfriends. Her love letters to Ted Hughes that conclude Volume 1 are absolutely magnificent for the emotion that they present. And so she was really able to keep the interests of her recipients in mind as she wrote her letters.
What I was most struck by looking at the letters, Peter, was especially the letters to her mother, how energetic and chipper these are, which is maybe not what I expected of the kind of stories we hear about Sylvia Plath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she probably wore a certain face or mask when she was writing to her mother, because her mother typically liked hearing good things. But when she wrote to her mom, it was a way for her to, tell her that she had just had a poem published or a short story accepted. The letters that she wrote during the courtship with Ted Hughes in the spring of 1956 absolutely bubble over with emotion. And this was at a time when her mom, when her grandmother, her mother's mother, was dying of cancer. So she was sort of trying to give her mom something else to think about, something that was very happy.
And there's a lot to write about because she's a busy woman during this period. She's doing up the house, she's sewing, she's fitting in all this stuff around her pursuit of writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she makes me feel very lazy because she was always doing something. And she was a faithful reporter in that you could bet that if she was experiencing something, she was going to write it to someone in some way, shape, or form.
So in this volume, Peter, the collection begins when Plath is 24. She's newly married to Ted Hughes. What is life like at this time for 24-year-old Sylvia Plath?
Well, she's very busy. She's a student at Cambridge University in the second year of her Fulbright at Newnham College. As you said, she was recently married. She's trying to publish her work. She's acting as secretary and sending out Ted Hughes's manuscripts as well. So she's doing a lot of schoolwork, a lot of creative writing, homemaking, as well as being the agent for her husband. And it was in large part because of her efforts at the beginning of the volume that Ted Hughes's first book, The Hawk in the Rain, was published.
Yeah, it struck me that the affection she has for him and her belief in him, she thinks he's a genius, doesn't she?
Absolutely, and it was unwavering even to the end.
Of course, then in 1962, she discovers that Ted Hughes is having an affair. What does Sylvia Plath write about this event to the psychiatrist, Dr. Ruth Boischer?
Right, so these letters are very powerful, and the thing that astounds me the most about them was, let me back up and just say that prior to having access to these letters, some of the details about what went on in July of 1962, as well as in August and September, were fuzzy. They weren't set in stone necessarily the way many other things about Plath's life were. So in these letters, we actually have a very raw and in-the-moment response through them to what Plath was experiencing mentally and emotionally and so on. So these letters just provide some context for the situation that she was going through at the time, which was exceedingly difficult.
So what does she tell the psychiatrist about this affair?
When the first sort of affair letters start, Plath doesn't necessarily know who the female is who Ted Hughes is seeing. She has her suspicions, but she writes something very, very brutally honest, which is that she wanted to know who it was so that it would stop being everyone. She just had this fear that it could be anybody walking down the street and she wouldn't necessarily know. So that's the sort of thing that we get. And then she slowly, over the course of several weeks and months, gets the full truth out of Ted, or some of the truth out of Ted Hughes about who the affair was with, some of the situations that, he's just going out in London and drinking and checking into hotels and trying to meet other women. And it just kind of carries on and on and on. And it must have been brutal.
And as you mentioned, these letters to the psychiatrist, many people didn't know about these letters, including Plath's own daughter, Frieda. How did these letters eventually come to light?
Okay, so in 1970, there was a biographer who befriended Dr. Boischer, and Dr. Boischer ended up entrusting the letters to her. And over the course of the decades, those letters stayed with the biographer, well, the would-be biographer. She never completed her work. And around 1990, Dr. Boischer asked for them back, but she never received them back. Well, fast forward to 2016, and Olwen Hughes, Ted Hughes' sister, passed away. And it was at that moment that the letters became known. And initially, they had been part of this biographer's archive of materials that she collected on Plath, and they had hoped to sell them to a public institution so that they could be used by researchers. And then, adding a little bit to the story, Smith College, who now holds the letters, ended up suing the biographer, claiming that they own the letters, because they own Dr. Boischer's other papers, and the feeling was that those letters should have been in the papers because Dr. Boischer had asked for them back.
There's a very powerful foreword in your book written by Plath's daughter, Frieda, and she talks about her kind of struggle with reading these letters and the fact that they have been released, because obviously this was a woman writing to a doctor, a psychiatrist, about her mental state. What was the decision for you to go ahead and publish these?
The decision was never mine or Karen's to make. It was Frieda's completely. We would have gladly gone with whatever Frieda decided. If she decided not to publish them, then I don't know. I don't think I would have had any sway in trying to get them to be published. But as it was, Frieda did decide to publish them, and as such, I supported that decision.
You mentioned earlier that Sylvia Plath seemed to tailor her writing to different audiences, those very chipper, energetic letters to her mother. These letters that she writes to Dr. Boysha. How different are these in style?
Very, very different. There's nothing like them in any of the other 1,400 or so letters that we have. So in that regard, they're probably going to be the most talked about in addition to the love letters to Ted Hughes, because they both represent these extreme sort of spectrums of emotion, a kaleidoscope of feelings. And they couldn't be more different. You know, the 1956 letters to Ted Hughes, I think, actually lend some context to the way that Plath was writing to Dr. Boysher in 1962 when the marriage broke up, because you really get a sense of the deep love that Plath had for her husband. And for that to have been taken away by his own doing really, really, damaged her and her feelings very badly.
What advice does Dr. Boysher provide to Sylvia Plath about her marriage?
Well, there's very little. There are two letters that that are retained in the archive at Smith College from Dr. Boysher to Plath. There seems to be evidence in Plath's letters back to Dr. Boysher that there may have been a third letter, but the advice was few and far, or the letters back were few and far between. You know, Plath sent 9 letters in the last months of her life to Dr. Boysher, and to only get a couple of responses, I don't feel was very sufficient to help her process the complexity of the emotions that she was experiencing. And as such, this might not be fair to say, but I feel like Plath may have been let down by Dr. Boysher and by the lack of attention that she was getting.
The last letter in your collection is addressed to Dr. Ruth Boysher. It's dated the 4th of February, 1963, and it's a really difficult letter to read because she's talking about how she needs help, and we know that she ends her life a week later. Can you tell me, Peter, what she says in this final letter?
Yeah, the letter starts out with an update that she had moved from North Taunton to London, and she was sort of ensconced in her flat now. And then it quickly moves into some really, really difficult emotional territory where she's talking about being afraid of the return of her madness. She is having suicidal thoughts. She says that she's just thinking about throwing it all away. And so it digresses from that point on, and then ends with a rather moving sentiment, which is that her children were crying and she had to take them out for tea.
Peter, you've made the study of Sylvia Plath your life. I mean, do you have an emotional response when you read this letter?
I did not when I was editing them, because I felt like I couldn't allow myself that luxury. But now that the sort of project is finished and I was rereading the letters in the last couple of days, They were much more difficult to read through this lens as just a sort of casual reader than as the one who is trying to get them published.
We know that Sylvia Plath's journals from this period, the end of her life, are missing. I think Ted Hughes said he destroyed one of them to protect the children. How important are these letters to Sylvia Plath's psychiatrist, considering that really this is all we have from this period?
You hit the nail on the head when you said that this is all that we have from that period. It's everything. The letters do provide a massive amount of information into Plath's state of mind at the time and into some of the other biographical details that we previously didn't have. And you do get the sense that the letters that she was writing, you know, you can probably make some assumptions, some safe assumptions on what sort of content might have been in the journals at the time. We do have Plath's prior journals from the December of 1958 into 1959, when she was seeing Dr. Boysher in Boston. And those are really heavy reading as well, because she's really sort of interrogating and investigating herself and her relationship with Ted Hughes and her mother and so on and so forth. So I do think they provide a glimpse as to how much would have been in the journals.
And why do you think it's important that we, as readers of Sylvia Plath, need to have this insight into her personal life? You know, can we just enjoy her work on its own, or what does having all this extra information and insight add to the experience, do you think?
That's a tough question, because there are a lot of people who would like to separate the biography of Sylvia Plath from her creative works. However, I don't think that that's always possible, because we do know that she relied heavily on her own experiences in her creative writing. So in these letters, and you know, in the ones to Dr. Boischer, there are glimpses in some of her phrasing that sort of draw a straight line to her poetry. For example, there's a line in a poem called The Other that she wrote on the 2nd of July, 1962, and she says, "Cold glass, how you insert yourself between myself and myself." And then 11 days later, when she's writing her first letter to Dr. Boischer, she basically reiterates that same turn of phrase.
Peter Steinberg, thank you so much for taking me on the Sylvia Plath journey today.
Thank you very much.
The Letters of Sylvia Plath, Volume 2, 1956 to 1963, are published by Faber and Faber. And of course, if this interview has raised any issues for you, make sure you call Lifeline on 13 11 14. This is The Book Show. I'm Claire Nichols, and this is Breathe, I'll Breathe, with its song Sylvia Plath.
Sylvia Plath. Sylvia Plath. After dark, walking through the graveyard, still laughing. When I was a scared, still.